Willkommen und welcome in the Business Launch Salzburg. For a change, we will present this episode in two parts in English and we dig deeper into sustainability matters. Business Launch Salzburg is a podcast from Moor Salzburg, especially for entrepreneurs and who aspire to be, with the moderators Patrick and Carmen.
Welcome. This episode is all about sustainability and climate change as key trends. We have invited Mr. Huber as our guest and expert from a financial institution. Very glad to have you here in the Business Launch Salzburg.
Hello and thank you for having me.
Before we start talking about sustainability and its impact on business and banking, we would be happy to offer you a cocktail. What is your favorite one and is there a story behind your choice?
I will have an iced mocha, please. It is a blend of homemade chocolate sauce, a fine espresso and almond milk swirled together over ice. And it's a drink I associate with New Orleans in Louisiana. And there, the deep dark coffee helped me recover from the New Orleans Jazz Fest.
Wow.
Good choice.
In our last episode, we were talking about sustainability in the service sector. Dr. Striegel, our guest, told us his personal definition of sustainability. He focuses on being good to what is good for nature, life and community. What is the definition of sustainability that fits your concept, Mr. Huber?
Well, in a nutshell, I would say that sustainability is something that is fulfilled if it causes little or no damage to the environment or to other public goods, and that therefore it is able to continue for a long time. And this is something which also the Cambridge Dictionary defines as being sustainable.
Thank you for your definition about sustainability. Many companies have already started providing information on ESG metrics. This is an abbreviation for environmental, social and governance in the annual report or in a sustainability report. One of the key issues concerns climate change. To begin with, we suggest to start out with the basics, the scientific assessments of climate change, its implications, and potential future risks. Derived from that, who could be affected?
Well, let me begin my remarks by mentioning that the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, was created already in 1988. It has close to 200 member countries, and through its assessments, the IPCC determines the state of knowledge on climate change. And these assessment reports are key input into the international negotiations to formulate realistic response strategies. Today, there is sufficient scientific evidence that climate change is a serious and urgent issue. And with good policies, the cost of action would be smaller than the damage averted. Economists describe human-induced climate change as an so-called externality and the global climate as a public good. This means that those who create greenhouse gas emissions, as they generate fossil fuel-based power, do not have to pay adequately for the costs of the climate change that results from their actions. This makes it hard to imagine how market mechanisms alone could protect the depletion of a public good. In addition, climate change is global in its causes and effects, and its impacts develop over long periods of time.
Okay, sounds like a quite difficult subject. For these reasons, policymakers need to provide a clear sense of direction on how to achieve the emissions reduction targets. Based on that, whom does this affect? Which sectors of the economy and society should give attention to these developments?
Let me highlight one thing here. In terms of economic sectors affected, we should not only think about the obvious industries coming to mind, for example, the power sector, manufacturing, or airlines. They are already partly covered by the EU emissions trading system, which was set up in 2005. Beyond that, in July of last year, the European Commission adopted a series of legislative proposals setting out how it intends to achieve climate neutrality in the EU by 2050, including intermediate targets by 2030. What we face here is the transition to a climate neutral society. Therefore, all parts of society and economic sectors will potentially play a role and may be affected accordingly. From mobility to buildings and agriculture and various industrial and service sectors.
Good point. You mentioned all parts of society and economic sectors will potentially play a role, and not only the obvious ones, and that the EU has a clear vision. How do they tackle that issue?
Well, this is really sort of the core consideration here. They aim at bringing all relevant policy areas in line with the Paris Agreement objective to keep the global temperature increase to well below 2 degrees centigrade. Not only the EU, but each member state is required to develop strategies on how they plan to achieve the greenhouse gas emissions reductions needed to meet their commitments under the Paris Agreement.
Now, this is not all new, isn't it? Does it build on long-standing efforts on the global level to reduce emission?
Yes, exactly. It is important to be mindful of the fact that major work on the international climate conferences was already undertaken starting in the 1990s, with countries committing to emission reduction targets leading up to the 26th Conference of the Parties to the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, the so-called COP26 in Glasgow last year.
What are the underlying developments enabling these ever-increasing efforts?
Well, we observe an ever-growing certainty within the scientific community about climate developments. This has been enabled in particular by stronger modeling capabilities and computer processing power. And built on this, you can now construct models indicating potential states of the climate over many decades. And this information and how economic growth and energy use interact with the physical climate can be used to inform climate and energy policies. However, challenges remain in quantifying the economic impacts of climate change precisely.
I can very well imagine that. To sum this up, we are now in the position to project future greenhouse gas emissions and the benefits and costs of policy options that could be implemented to tackle them. On the one hand, this leads to transparency. On the other hand, it also requires information from real-life actors, right?
I highlight why this is important. The types and total amounts of greenhouse gases released are essential inputs into climate models. So this is the amount of the greenhouse gases. And the potential pathways for the concentration of those gases in the atmosphere is based on future emission scenarios. So then the old saying applies, what gets measured gets managed. So this is why creating transparency is a central step here. And it is against this background that the EU Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive and its new and far-reaching reporting standards will provide companies with clarity on what and how they need to report. Companies will need to provide information around their plans and capacity to adapt their business models and operations to the transition to a sustainable economy. And companies will also be required to report on KPIs in the areas of energy consumption, greenhouse gas emissions, and financial risk exposure.
And how does this relate to other EU sustainability regulations, for example, the so-called EU taxonomy?
Well, the EU aims to integrate and interlink all these regulations. The taxonomy for sustainable activities is a classification system establishing a list of environmentally sustainable economic activities. It relies on input from experts, and it is a central regulatory building block. It defines so-called technical screening criteria for economic activities and provides companies, investors, and policymakers with a type of common language and a clear definition of what environmentally sustainable means. This is also intended to help shift investments where they are most needed to achieve sustainability goals. At the same time, this common taxonomy protects investors from greenwashing. It prevents conveying misleading information about how environmentally sound a company's products are. And beyond that, the EU Commission's new proposal on sustainable supply chains will be another important building block. Among other things, the Commission wants companies to adopt climate transition plans in line with the 1.5 degree target of the Paris Climate Agreement.
So these are really all embracing matters. The regulatory sustainability drive has a two-sided perspective. One, focusing on how external ESG factors impact the company. And the other, focusing on how the company itself impacts these ESG factors. What does that mean in consequence?
This merits kind of more attention than has been the case so far, I think, because this is called the outside-in and the inside-out perspective, or the so-called double materiality concept. Depending on which view you take, you either stress the risks a company faces due to sustainability risk factors, or you emphasize the risks a company itself poses to sustainability objectives. And both views are needed if company management intends, for example, to implement emission reduction targets and manage risks associated with the transition to a low carbon economy. And in turn, a non-financial reporting framework may stress the publication of the risks a company faces, or in the case of applying the double materiality concept, also require the disclosure of sustainability risks the company causes and eventual emission reduction targets.
Sounds like a comprehensive approach, considering both sides. From what we heard so far, it's clear that in the European Union, we follow the concept of the double materiality. Now, to shift the perspective to a specific sector like the financial market, how do financial market players take sustainability aspects into account?
There are various ways financial market players, so banks, asset managers, or pension funds can proceed. Taking climate change again as an example, banks need to evaluate two main categories of risks. First, physical risks that are associated with climate change, for example, flooding or increased frequency of storms or less snow in lower areas. And second, the so-called transition risks. These are risks to a company stemming from regulatory or fiscal changes, for example, the introduction of a carbon tax or the shift to new technologies. Such developments can have a negative impact on a company's creditworthiness and will need to be reflected in the pricing of a loan. In addition, legal risks and risks to the reputation of a company may materialize. And decarbonization will continue to gather pace, So let's not forget this also presents opportunities for financial investors in the area of emissions reduction and energy efficiency technologies. Some studies point to a lack of awareness about future climate-related costs by investors. And this also supports the concerns that financial markets currently may not adequately price in climate-related financial risks.
In conclusion, sustainability aspects do not only affect large companies and financial market participants. In general, which companies do the rules already apply to?
Well, some parts of the regulatory framework are mainly tailored towards large companies. In the EU, under the Non-Financial Reporting Directive, only large listed companies, banks and insurance companies with more than 500 employees are currently required to publish reports on the policies they implement in relation to environmental protection, social responsibility, etc. So in Austria, the criteria are laid down in the business code.
Thank you, Mr. Huber, for providing us this interview about the exciting topic sustainability. This episode takes its break now, and we are looking forward to part two, which will be broadcast in a few days and go into more hands-on details.
The second part of this episode will be more specific for you entrepreneurs. Which companies will have to take action and how do they have to do it? It will concern most of you, for sure. You don't have to wait long for your answers. It will be released before end of April.